All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Check them out. They appreciate it. Good morning, good morning. September the 24th, 2021. How is everybody hanging, doing? It is the day after my father's birthday, which was the 23rd. Which was the day after my brother's birthday, which was the 22nd. Mine was the 10th. We're all September kids. September born. My father's clearly, or none of us actually are still kids. We are adults. It has been, it's been an interesting week or so. I don't know if when's the last time I podcast, but, my father had a procedure on Friday. Simple in and out, which turned out to be more than an in and out, and then turned into being an in and staying in. And he was in the hospital all week. Now he's in rehab, but I don't know. The other day was just, we had gone up to Connecticut, and I was texting with my brother, and just really full of emotions. When it comes to my dad, it's a trippy relationship. And he's doing fine. He actually went to a rehab. It's weird. He's kind of following the same path my mother followed. So he was at BB and then to rehab. The difference was my mom wasn't rehabable. She was, pretty bad. So, but my dad, he requested to go there. He needed to catch up. He'd gotten behind in his strength. So, he's smart enough to know, listen, I need some rehab. So he's there. I bet he gets home. I bet they send him home the next couple of days. Knock on wood, everything goes as planned. I talked to him last night. It was funny because as time has gone on and the loss of my mother, and I think as we just get older, our friends and our audience, so to speak, kind of starts to, whether they die off or, we all kind of go on our own separate ways. He doesn't have as many people to talk to. And, we've been having my dad over for dinner now, and I've shared about this. We had made that conscious effort to really spend some time, especially when my mom was still alive, to put everything aside, put all the nitpicking and the unimportant things aside, and just made a conscious effort to really spend the last of our days together, so to speak, hopefully in a more positive side, less bickering and arguing. And just enjoying family in the last of our time together. And I was so grateful because, when this had all started, my mom was in pretty good health, clearly getting older, but, to pass away was not on the radar. So we had gotten to spend a lot of time with my mom, especially we would come over and make breakfast for my folks on Sundays and just made that happen. And I'm so grateful because, later on my mom getting sick and then passing on, and it's all self stuff, right? How do I feel? What's my interpretation of her last days? And unfortunately with the COVID being in the home and stuff by herself, I mean, I'm sure she was annoyed, but I think, I'm hoping that we satisfied the end of her life, so to speak. I don't know. It's weird, but. After her passing, so what are we left with? We're left with my father, and I love my dad. He's a great guy. He's a total pain in the butt, as well. I mean, just like I am. I'm a pain in the butt, but I appreciate him. It's interesting to talk with someone, especially I think he turned 85, so someone that's clearly come through 85 years of life and. The changes and, when you talk to somebody like my dad, it's hard for them to get their hands and their mind around life today. Life today is so much different and compared to life, and we all have parents, so I'm sure we all go through this listening to how our parents grew up and the simplicity of life and, they're always like, oh, I love to work and just the changes that have gone on and to watch or to listen to my dad you know, kind of change his position on things or to kind of surrender, so to speak. It is all about the surrender. And, you know, my dad was a big supporter of Trump, which, you know, I'm not going to, this isn't about Trump, but he's now like, I don't know, there's some things, you know, and I'm not going to, I guess the point is that he's become a little bit more open to different ideas and thoughts. You know, my dad was always in the military, colonel. Life had been kind of, you know, as long as he, you know, walked the straight and narrow and you know, lived the military life, his life was set for him. I mean, he literally had, you know, insurance, a pension, retirement, everything that you would ever need in life was not given to him. He earned it through working in the military. So for him to understand what life is like today for most of us, where I was watching something that said, you know, 1% of people, and we always hear the 1%, the top 2% or whatever, but it said 1% of people make an income of $1.48 million. I don't know if that's a family or if that's an individual. But the rest, the other 99%, average about $48,000. And again, I don't know if that's a family or if that's a person. If that's a family, that's pretty, you know, unfortunately, in the world we live in, that's pretty poor, right? That's kind of where we're at. I mean, as a family, we make more than that. But as an individual, you know, we're not rich. And, you know, it's a tough battle. And so to just have conversations. And so him being in the home, you know, I called him last night and, you know, one of the things that we do, because he comes over three or four times a week now for dinner, you know, if everything goes as planned. And usually we have dinner with the family and then him and I will sit outside or on the couch and watch some shit on YouTube or just, you know, just chat. And he's like starting to understand things like the words humility and surrender and the role that we all play. And even life, when life's going just perfect, you know. And he's just kind of waving the white flag a little bit and stepping off some of his positions that he's pretty much stood firm on for a long time. And the problem is the world is changing. It is changing. So I guess the whole point is I'm just really grateful to have him in our lives still and to have gone through everything that we've gone through and to still be together. You know, my brother was down. Like I said, my dad had a procedure last week. We were going out of town. My brother came down and handled taking care of my dad, you know, got him to the hospital and then spent time with them. And but the day before he went in, we all sat and had dinner and just kind of reminisced like we always do. It always goes back to, you know, being 15 years old and all the fuck ups that my brother and I did. It's, you know, you never leave that conversation feeling very good about ourselves. I know that I have let it all go. I mean, it's the past. And like I said the other day, I said, listen, that's the past, you know. Why reminisce when we were 15? It's 38 years ago. A lot has changed. And I look at my past, man, and I try to figure it out. I try to figure out what went wrong. I try to figure out, you know, I'm just a normal person, but this happened, or maybe I'm really, truly just a fucked up person. It's hard to say. I know that being adopted was interesting. It didn't seem like it was an issue at the time. I think because I was growing up with parents that spoiled us, and it seemed awesome. You know, we used to get everything we wanted. It was crazy. I mean, it's kind of like how it is now with kids, but we were kind of maybe the early ones getting everything we wanted. It just seemed like, you know, didn't seem abnormal to me at the time. Always had friends that used to say, you guys are spoiled. Because we got bikes. I remember we got a waterbed. I don't know. It seemed normal, but looking back, I guess we were pretty spoiled. I don't know if that was it. And then the big mystery. And this is kind of something that I've been thinking about a lot is, you know, who were my birth parents? Who made me, right? Who made me this way? I have, unfortunately, and I've shared the story about, I think I've shared the story when I reached out to try to find my birth mother through the adoption agency that had handled the adoption. And they didn't really, the first couple of attempts, they didn't really know much. They had some pictures of my father, and it was like a Xerox copy of a newspaper, and it was really a bad picture. Unfortunately, though, it was him in prison for being, he wasn't in there for being an alcoholic, but he was in there for behavior while intoxicated. And one of them was fighting with the police, which I was like, geez. I luckily, I've never fought with the police. I've ran my mouth and been abruptly adjusted by a police officer, but I've never fought with them. But clearly my birth father was an alcoholic. And, you know, coming from the times, you know, in the 60s, you know, it's got to be tough to be an alcoholic and exist, right? I mean, you just didn't have a lot of, I mean, I don't know what the opportunities were there for folks that had substance abuse problems, but I know AA was clearly around in the 60s, right? So, but, you know, he was an alcoholic. He struggled, and I never found out who he was. I did, like I said, I did find out, I did see a rough Xerox copy picture of him, but that was one small little glimpse into maybe why I am the way I am. You know, it is it's hereditary. It's passed on sometimes, right? So I've been lately thinking about doing like a 23andMe or whatever it is to try to figure out, you know, some of my history. My history is a mystery. It's like, you know, most folks who are, you know, born with regular parents and raised by your parents, they know a lot about their life. Oh, mom, tell me about grandma's life, or tell me about my great-grandmother's life. And you learn, you know, when they came over, or, you know, whatever the story was, and you fill in the missing pieces. But when you're adopted, you know, it's like it starts with us. I've told that to the boys. You know, it starts with us, guys, because we don't know anything about our history. And it's kind of weird because they kind of get kind of ripped off, too. I don't know if that's the right term, ripped off, but they don't really understand their history, right? You know, their mothers have history. You know, my first wife was Norwegian, and, you know, talk about the history of that side of it. And but we're always missing that other, the why, the other side of the why. You know, what is my story? So I've been thinking about it. I'm trying to figure out. To me, this is one of those serenity kind of things, you know. Serenity, what motivates me? What do I think I'm going to learn? What's it going to fix? Am I trying to fix something? I feel pretty good where I'm at in my life today, you know. Still struggle a little bit with food, I guess. I don't know. If I was going to point out anything or any hiccup that's going on, maybe food, but I'm fine. It was funny. We went to, we had to take my daughter to a doctor's visit, and they had a scale, and I stood on it, and I was trying to find out how much I weighed because I don't have a scale. And I'm pushing, you know, I had like a pounds and kilograms and pounds, kind of like a toggle button, you know. It either showed you in kilograms or in pounds. And it was in kilograms. I'm like pushing the button, like, how much do I weigh? And the lady goes, it only tells you in kilograms. You just have to times the number by 2.1. So if you're ever trying to figure out weight, apparently if you weigh yourself in kilograms, you take that number and times it, multiply it by 2.1. And I was like, oh, okay. So I stood on it, and for some reason I thought it said 81 kilograms, but I think it was 71. Because I typed 81 times 2.1, it was like 193. I was like, holy shit, I'm 193 pounds? But I'm not. Actually, I feel better, really, than I have felt in a long time. Really been cutting sugar out. I've been cutting bread out of my diet. You know, it's kind of like, you know, before I got sober, my life was a wreck, and I wanted to blame everything else except for the one thing that was really the reason, which was that I drank a lot of alcohol. You know, it was always my boss, my parents, you know, if I just had this or if I just had that. But really the problem was the alcohol. And it's kind of the same way with my diet or me, I don't like to call it a diet, just me adjusting the things that I eat. And, you know, I could go to like a fat farm or I could get a trainer or I could go do a program. And each one of those things are going to tell me the same thing, which is you can't eat too much sugar and really you can't eat too much of whatever turns into sugar. Sugar one, bread is another. Bread eventually breaks down into some sort of sugar. It's unfortunate. That's why it's so delicious. So, you know, you can pay somebody a bunch of money to tell you that, or I can just finally say, listen, I can't eat bread and I can't eat sugar. And so just removing those two simple things and then trying to adjust by eating natural things, almonds and avocados and, you know, simple things has actually made me feel better. And I haven't even been running. I've really just been kind of living. But it's the same, you know, it's the same thing with alcohol. You know, when my life was a mess and I blamed everything else, really the reality was, and I'll never forget Dr. Hecker telling me, hey, because I said, I'm depressed. I have depression. And he asked me, well, first question, how much alcohol do you drink? And I lied. And I told him I only had a couple beers a day, which was a full, flat-out lie. I was drinking a bottle of vodka a day. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's my motivation behind trying to find my birth parents or at least learn about them. Is it going to answer something that I didn't know? Is it going to quiet some inner voice in my head that constantly nags at me that I'm not, it's talking, I'm just not listening? I don't know. You know, is it going to make me more sober? Is it going to help me with serenity? I'd like to think that I'm at a pretty good place. But it's still there. It's still this nagging voice, you know. And I really love the father that I have. You know, it's weird. Him and I have really a great relationship. We have great conversation. You know, what kind of brought this all up is I called him last night and I ended up talking to him on the phone for 10 or 15 minutes because he wants somebody to talk to. And that's what I've become, his person to talk to, and you know, because he gets a lot of thoughts in his head and he's got to get them out. And so we chat and I send him YouTube videos, and it's funny, you know, it's kind of cute. He's like, if you have a father or mother that's in their 80s, more than likely they struggle with using an iPhone, the technology. So I know there's some folks out there that are just awesome, that's great, but he struggles, right? He's always had the iPhone 5, and then it took a shit on him. I mean, the phone like swelled up. And so I bought him a new iPhone 11, the big one, you know, and he's like really, he's sending me texts. You know, we've never texted, my father and I, or mother. My mother was never a texter. But he's texting me, you know, the phone's bigger now. He can use his thumbs a little more. But he's texting and, you know, I'm sending him, you know, I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube, so I'm sending him YouTube videos. And there was a great story on YouTube. I think it was CBS Morning News, but about this CEO. And this is it's a fantastic story, but it creates a lot of weird thought for me. But the story went, there was a CEO in Seattle who owned a credit card managing or processing company. So his company found cheaper credit card processing rates, which save people money, right? So he had this great business. It wasn't huge, but it was a million-dollar business. I mean, it was doing well. He was paying himself $1 million a year. And so at some point, he decided that he was going to take a pay cut of $1 million, and he was going to pay every one of his employees a minimum base salary of $70,000 a year. And everybody was, you know, it was in the news, this guy's crazy. He's, you know, he's spitting on capitalism. He is, you know, he's going to fail, bankrupt. I remember Rush Limbaugh, they showed in the story how Rush Limbaugh was saying this guy was an idiot and kicking it was socialism. And it was just really interesting. But so this guy does it. And, you know, of course, his employees are like, yes. And but I don't know if I'm going to say it's an experiment, because then later on in the interview, the guy just says, I'm so much happier. The owner, I'm so much happier now with my life like this, spreading the wealth, giving my employees the money. And, you know, now the employees are building houses and having families. And the lady asks one of the couples, they're like, why have a baby now? And she goes, hey, we can afford it, you know. And, you know, to my father, that's insane. You know, why would you do that? And at one point, which is really cool, was that during when the COVID hit, the guy, I forget his name, but he lost a lot of business during COVID. He lost 55% of his business. So his employees volunteered to take a pay cut, which they did. They got through it. Business picked up. And then the owner went back, raised their money back to the initial $70,000, and then proceeded to pay them back all the money from the pay cut that they had voluntarily took. I mean, that's fucking unheard of. I mean, I'm sure it happens, but for a company like that to do that, that's just unheard of. And it was a great story. I think, you know, of course, we're not going to do that, right? Because I don't like to use the word greedy, but for some reason, we're wired to make money and make as much as we can, and that creates success and that creates value, and people respect people that have a lot of money. It's funny, there's people around this town that make a lot of money, and you watch, and social media will allow you to watch this, but, you know, you see three people, like, have a birthday, and the one that makes the most money gets the most likes. And I'm sure it's because they probably have more friends, but it's more important for the friends of the people with the money to make sure they say happy birthday than it is for the people that don't seem to make a lot of money, which is, it's unfortunate. Money creates power. But anyway, I don't know what the whole point of this conversation is. I'm just super grateful that I have my dad and that I can pay him back and be there for him, really, because he is, you know, at this age, you know, and I even know at my age, I worry, you know, that I'll have somebody in my life, right? Somebody take care of me. I I've talked about it, I think, in the past, you know, coming into a program and trying to get sober, and it seems to me, looking back at it now, it was very, as much as it shouldn't be, how in the initial beginning getting sober for me, it was very ego-based. You know, sobriety to me, and this is just me, take it for whatever, but sobriety is very ego-based. It's like, I got to get sober, I want people to know, I want to be recognized, I want to see the results of my hard work, I. Give me my coin, let's get time, how does this look to you, let's make coffee, let's be... I mean, I've seen it all, book bags and pillow meetings. I mean, it's all about the I, me, me, me. And at some point, you know, if after getting enough time and really, and honestly, maybe just in the last few years, maybe it's been five, still trying to get my hands around what the hell this transition between what I was, trying to get sober, more of an ego base, to trying to find serenity, a more humble-based side of this whole adventure. The white flag. Don't have to be right. I don't mind being wrong. You're right, I'm wrong, it's fine. You know, whether, you know, I guess as long as I am wrong. I mean, you still want to stick up for yourself, but listen, it ain't worth fighting about. Let's look at the big picture. You know, big picture for to me is more humble based. In the moment right now, what I want is probably a little bit more ego-based. But big picture, what's this, the whole point? What's this going to turn out to be? Let's avoid all that. You know, that's the more serenity, humble side of what I have. I didn't come here for it. I didn't even want it. You know, when I got sober, it wasn't because I wanted to say, you know what, Dad, you're right. You're right. Mom, you're right. I'm wrong. Let's make adjustments and let's not let that happen anymore. It was more about, I'm not going to be drunk driving. Look at me. I'm doing great. You know, I've got so many days. Pat me on the back. You know, I wasn't thinking of any of that serenity side of it. And today, thank God, you know, I've come out on the other side, so to speak, and I'm willing to wave that white flag. I'm willing to say, hey, you know, I don't have to be right. Hey, you're right. It's more about the big picture. I want some serenity. I want to be able to be there for my father. And I know people, you know, a good buddy of mine got in that big fight with his father. And basically, and then his father passed away. You know, I don't want that. I want my dad to go out of this world feeling safe. And if that's the main thing that I end up getting out of this whole thing, that's pretty freaking awesome. But knowing that I had to get a whole lot more stuff before that started to happen, I don't know. I guess the point is if you got... Oh, maybe I should read... Let me read the Daily Reflections real quick. My thoughts are a little scattered today, so bear with me. Here we go. All right, September the 24th, vigilance. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservations of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 33. Today I'm an alcoholic. Tomorrow will be no different. My alcoholism lives within me now and forever. I must never forget what I am. Alcohol will surely kill me if I fail to recognize and acknowledge my disease on a daily basis. I am not playing a game in which loss is a temporary setback. I'm dealing with a disease for which there is no cure, only daily acceptance and vigilance. Yeah. One day at a time, you know, you got to stay focused on the prize. It comes very slowly, but in the end, it's being able to have relationships with your parents in the end. I don't know how your relationship is or was, but I know that mine was rough in that white flag moment, and today I'm there for my father. later.